Hello, this is Beth Ludwig from Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from the June 2010 issue of Ladies' Home Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Our first section this month is called Answer Lady, where readers write in and questions are answered about manners and morals. First question. My 21-year-old son recently told me and my husband he's gay. As far as he's concerned, there's no reason to keep it secret. But we don't know how or even whether to share this information with friends and families. Any advice? Here's the answer. The first question is, how do you feel about it? If you and your husband need time to process what may have come as an unexpected revelation, it is perfectly understandable if you decide to keep the information to yourselves for a while. But if you're struggling with the news, you might find comfort in discussing it with close friends or family members. In any case, you don't have to inform the whole neighborhood, though I'm sure you already know that there's no reason at all to feel embarrassed by the news. In fact, you should be proud that he is comfortable with who he is. If you choose to tell people but don't know quite what to say, try something like, Todd recently told us he's gay, or Todd introduced us to his new boyfriend last month. As far as dealing with acquaintances or family members who may feel or will disapprove, stalling until there's a reason to tell them is also fine. Maybe your son will deal with it for you. When I have a dinner party at my house, I always take care of everything myself. But whenever my friends invite me to their homes, they expect me to bring a dish. I find this kind of annoying. Can I say something? Here's the answer. You can say potluck. That's what one usually calls a party where each of the guests brings part of the meal. It sounds as though this is the kind of gathering that's popular in your circle. It's just you're the lone lady bountiful who wants to do it all herself. Since the obvious solution would be to join the crowd and let your dinners be cooperative too, I'm assuming you've ruled this out. So just accept that you prefer entertaining the old way, while your friends do not. If you don't want to take a dish to the next party, try saying something like, I'll be so glad to get out of the kitchen for once. Let me pick something up at the market. I'm sure bread, cheese, or wine would be much appreciated. The next question. My elderly aunt tells the same stories over and over again. Is it okay to interrupt and tell her that we've already heard that one? Here's the answer. My personal feeling is that you should just quietly put up with it. While your aunt is nattering on about how she and Uncle Jim met at a carnival game booth, smile graciously. Nod and think about how much you'll miss your aunt and her goofy stories someday. Don't worry if you start to zone out. She probably won't even notice. With a repetitious peer, it's perfectly okay to be a little more direct. Gently interrupt and say, oh yeah, you told me about that the other day. Then be sure to add a supportive comment like, that's such a good story. Our next article is called Well Suited, How One Woman Helps Underprivileged Men Get the Clothes and the Skills They Need to Make a Fresh Start, by Kathleen Riley. When Sarah Monday was traveling as a motivational speaker and board member for Dress for Success, the nonprofit group that provides clothes and career help to disadvantaged women, she kept getting the same question over and over again. People would always ask, my husband has suits he doesn't wear anymore. Where can I donate those? Monday says, I have to apologize and tell them we only help women. When she returned home to Jacksonville, Florida, Monday tried to find programs that provide men the same kind of fresh start and was shocked to find there weren't any. That didn't seem fair to her. Having seen women totally turn their lives around while working with Dress for Success, Monday wanted to give men similar opportunities. So she settled down to work on a business plan for her own organization that would give men the tools they need to become self-sufficient and successful, starting with a new suit. Although Monday had never written a grant proposal before, she outlined her vision and submitted her plan to the city of Jacksonville. The city granted Monday $15,000 in startup funds, and in 2004, Suited for Success was born. At first, I asked my male friends to donate their own gently used suits and work clothes, she said. Then they mentioned it to their buddies, and suddenly people were calling and emailing me saying, "Hey, I want to help." When she had collected about 25 suits, Monday opened her doors to clients, who found her through a local church and agencies that provide support services to ex-offenders and homeless men. My guys get a complete outfit, suit, shirt, ties, socks, t-shirts, underwear, the works, Monday says. But her vision expanded quickly. I also wanted to make sure these men were the best candidates for the positions they were applying for, she says. Because she has worked for years as a personal and professional development consultant, Monday had the skills to coach her new nonprofit clients, too. With the help of some friends, she began editing the men's resumes, conducting mock interviews, and helping them with job searches. Driven by her desire to give struggling young men a chance, Monday also started offering free workshops and mentoring opportunities. 70% to 80% of my clients are ex-offenders, she says. You can't lock a man up and then expect him to change if you don't teach him how to find a job and be a productive citizen when he comes out. So Monday brought in male speakers, volunteers from 100 Black Men of Jacksonville, a leadership program, to offer classes on how to create a savings plan, balance a checkbook, learn fathering skills, and address relationship issues. Monday's impact on the Jacksonville community has been dramatic. When I met Sarah, I was a jobless, homeless, and very depressed, says Nathaniel Henley. She gave me a suit and encouraged me to reach for higher goals. 5 years after his first meeting with Monday, Henley is a prevention coordinator with the Northeast Florida AIDS Network and also serves as a board member for the Duval County Health Department. Suited for Success now serves more than 200 clients each month with the help of a small but dedicated team of volunteers and has 3 locations in the Jacksonville area. This year, Monday is even introducing a signature tie with the help of a local neckwear company and sitcom actor Tommy Ford. Her clients will sell the ties and receive a portion of the sales, which will help them earn income and network at the same time. Monday doesn't see an end to the number of men Suited for Success can reach or the services and support she can provide. The suit is definitely the symbol of the program, she says, but our mission is to help men be healthy, happy, and successful in every area of their lives. This month's challenge, participate in the Men's Warehouse National Suit Drive. This retail chain will accept gently used men's professional clothing items in exchange for a 10% off thank you coupon. Or go local and organize a men's clothing and shoe drive in your neighborhood. Then donate items you collect to a shelter or a group in your area. The Science of a Happy Marriage by Tara Parker Pope. In laboratories around the world, researchers are uncovering the secrets to lasting love. Check out the most important findings. The mystery of why some marriages succeed, while others fail, is something men and women have been trying to sort out for decades. What qualities make some couples more successful at navigating the stormy waters of love while others lose their way? Why are some people happy together and while others seem happiest when they're apart? And is there any way to protect a marriage from the risks of stress, negativity, and divorce? The answers to these questions are found in a surprising place. Far from the therapy couch or self-help gurus, the best insights about love and relationships actually come from the scientific community. Top researchers from universities around the world have devoted their careers to observing how couples interact. Initially, marital scientists focused on the negatives that can sabotage a marriage, ways that husband and wives cope with hard times, conflict, and unhappiness. But in recent years, they've shifted their focus to study the positive interactions that can promote intimacy and forge a stronger bond. Just as a doctor might prescribe blood pressure pills or a daily aspirin to keep your body healthy, marriage science also offers a prescription to boost the health of your relationship. Here are some successful strategies couples use to stay happy. Celebrate good news. Couples who are most committed, intimate, and satisfied in their relationships are those who appreciate each other's achievements. Your wife's meeting went well. Your husband finally beats his much younger racquetball partner. One of you got a raise. Marital scientists have found that celebrating even small accomplishments like these can help a relationship. Using a complex formula, researchers at UCLA and the University of Rochester measured how partners reacted to positive events in their loved one's life. The researchers also assessed the couple's feelings of commitment, relationship satisfaction, and intimacy, and found a link between the two. The happiest husbands and wives were those who made the biggest deal out of the good things that happened to them. The lesson? It's not enough that your spouse knows that you're proud of his accomplishments. Making a fuss over the small, good things that happen every day can boost the health of your marriage. Know the mathematics of marriage. At the University of Washington, researchers videotaped married couples in conversation and cataloged every nice or negative thing they did or said during a discussion. Things like laughing, touching, smiling, or paying a compliment were coded as positive interactions, and not-so-nice moments like eye-rolling, sneers, criticism, defensiveness, and so on were recorded as negative. As the researchers reviewed the data, a striking pattern emerged. In stable marriages, there are at least 5 times more positive interactions than negative ones. When the ratio starts to drop, the marriage is at high risk for divorce. In real life, no couple can keep a running tally of positive and negative displays. But in a practical sense, the lesson is that a single, "I'm sorry" after bad behavior isn't enough. For every snide comment or negative outburst in a marriage, you need to ramp up the positive so the good to bad ratio doesn't fall to a risky level. So the lesson? Don't wait until you are bickering to turn on the charm. Nice gestures and comments are easy to make and go a long way. Maintain high standards. One common thing couples often hear in counseling is that they have unrealistic hopes and expectations for marriages. If you're unhappy, maybe it's because you were simply expecting too much. But recent research suggests that high standards are a good thing. At the University of North Carolina, psychologist Donald Balcom set out to determine how having idealistic standards can affect a relationship. Couples answered questions on everything from sex and religion to career issues and finances. They also told researchers about how they communicate positive and negative feelings to their spouses. Dr. Balcom found that people who want to be treated well and who expect romance and passion get that kind of relationship. Those with lower standards end up in a marriage that doesn't offer those things. So the lesson? If you expect a better, more satisfying relationship, you improve your chances of having one. Pay attention to family and friends. Sociologist Naomi Gerstle of the University of Massachusetts have found that married people have fewer ties to relatives than those who are single. They are less likely to visit or call their parents and other family members and to socialize with neighbors, help out their friends, or be politically active. Today, we expect much more intimacy and support from our partners than we did in the past, but much less from everyone else, says Stephanie Kuntz, who teaches history and family studies at Evergreen State College. Kuntz thinks all this togetherness is not necessarily good for couples. The way to strengthen a marriage, she argues, is to put fewer emotional demands on spouses and instead to foster relationships with family members and friends. The lesson? Sometimes improving your marriage means giving it a break. Spending time with family and friends and society is good for your relationship. Keep the romantic love alive. Most studies of love and marriage show that the decline of romance is inevitable. In most marriages, the butterflies of early romance flutter away over time and are replaced by familiar, predictable feelings of long-term attachment. There's nothing wrong with the calm, settled feeling of compassionate love, but there's a risk that boredom and discontent will set in. That doesn't have to happen. Love researchers have come up with a way for long married couples to rekindle their early romance. Here's the prescription. Embark on a regular date night, but reinvent it to include new and unusual experiences. The advice is based on brain science. New experiences activate the brain's reward system, flooding it with the brain chemicals dopamine and norepinephrine. These are the same brain circuits that are ignited in early romantic love when you feel exhilarated by and obsessed with your new partner. And several experiments show that the novelty of simply doing new things together as a couple may help bring the butterflies back, recreating the chemical surges of early courtship. So, what's the lesson here? Protect your marriage by regularly trying new things and sharing new experiences with your spouse. The bully-proof kid. Teach your child how to stop teasing in its tracks, whether she's being picked on or watching it happen to a friend. This article is by Jana Oberdorf. Being the target of a bully is always a painful experience for a kid. And now, when taunts can fly at the speed of Twitter and a Facebook post is public knowledge, technology has helped make bullying more pervasive, unavoidable, and more serious than ever. As many as half of all the children are bullied at some point during their school years, and at least 10% are harassed on a regular basis, according to the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. What's more, your child most likely won't tell you if she's being bullied or if she sees someone else getting picked on. That's why it's so important for you to teach your kid how to recognize when she or a friend is in trouble and to ask for your help. What kind of kid becomes a bully? There are many theories about what makes a child the kind of person who would want to hurt others emotionally or physically. He may be aggressive because he's insecure or lacks social skills. He may be acting out of anger or frustration because he's been bullied himself. Or he could be modeling behavior he's seen at home in a parent or a sibling. Some kids bully because they're jealous of their victim or like the sense of power they get from picking on peers, says Ross Ellis of StopBullying.org. Whatever the cause, these kids seek out the weakest, most obvious targets and harass them again and again. How will I know if my child is being exposed to bullying? You might not. Kids are sometimes afraid to tell their parents or teachers. They worry that if you step in, the teasing will get worse. Or they're ashamed they can't deal with it themselves, says Alan Bean, author of Protect Your Child from Bullying. Or the problem may come in such a subtle form, your child is excluded from her normal spot at the lunch table, or is the subject of a mean rumor, for instance, that she might not even recognize it as bullying. If she sees a friend or classmate being teased, she may be afraid to speak up because the taunting might be redirected at her. The best thing you can do is encourage open communication at home so that your child feels comfortable talking to you when she first encounters a problem. Make sure you know that she knows that you'll never punish her for being honest. For instance, if your child is being cyberbullied, don't threaten to limit her internet access and look out for changes in her behavior. If she's sad, moody, or depressed after coming home from school, or if she's anxious in the morning, complains of constant headaches or stomach aches, has trouble sleeping, or loses interest in activities she once enjoyed, bullying may be the cause behind it. What should I do if my child is being bullied by someone or is witnessing it? First, you need to accept that you can't completely protect him from being picked on by classmates. But when teasing crosses the line and another child purposely, repeatedly tries to hurt your child, it's time to step in, says Richard Shattuck, Ph.D., the director of Pace University's Counseling Center. You could intervene by helping him handle the situation himself or by approaching the right authority, whether it's the other child's parents, school counselor, or principal. In the case of cyberbullying, inform your internet service or cell phone company. Bullies often think they can hide behind an anonymous screen name, so uncovering their identity can be enough to stop the behavior. If and when you feel you need to speak to school officials, be sure to take any evidence, including text messages, notes, or nasty emails, with you. Schools are responsible for what happens to your child while he's there, says Ellis. Bottom line, bullying can be stopped if you treat it seriously and take action. Here are some defense mechanisms. Bullies taunt other kids to get a reaction. Deny them that, and they're thrown off guard. Tell your child to try any or all of these strategies, whether he's being bullied himself or trying to help a friend. First strategy, walk away. Often the most effective way to stop a bully is to ignore the behavior and leave the room or schoolyard. If it's online bullying, tell your child not to respond and to immediately sign off, or use your computer's parental controls to block the bully's message. Next suggestion, get your game face on. Even nervous giggling or smiling can edge a bully on. So tell your child to keep his reactions to himself. If he doesn't respond, the bully won't get the results he's looking for. Next suggestion, don't back down. Sometimes facing the situation head on works best. Teach your child to tell the bully calmly, directly, and confidentially that he needs to back off. If your kid shows that he's willing to stand up for himself, it makes him appear more confident whether he feels that way or not. The last mechanism, step in. Your child could help if he sees someone getting teased by answering a mean comment with a nice supportive one or telling the bully to stop. With any luck, his courage will spread to both the victim and other bystanders, and the bully will lose his easy target and his audience. Our next article is called Cat Chat. We asked veterinarian Katrina Warren, a star of Animal Planet's House Cat House Call, to solve your biggest kitty dilemmas. Question. Dogs are one thing, but come on, can you really train a cat? True. It's a lot easier to train a dog, but you can walk cats on a harness outdoors, and you can teach them to do basic things, like sit or come, using food rewards. You just have to be more patient. Okay, let's start with scratching up the furniture. How do you get your cat to cut it out? Scratching is a natural behavior for cats. They do it to remove the dead outer layer of their claws, to mark territory with the scent glands in their paws, and just to get exercise. Since you can't stop the behavior, you need to give your cat something that's okay to scratch. Cats like the feel of rough, irregular surfaces, which is why most scratching posts are carpeted. Put one right beside the piece of furniture your cat has been using and encourage it to scratch that instead. What about a cat that suddenly stops using its litter box? First, check with your vet to see if there's an underlying medical condition, such as a urinary tract infection. Then it's time to play detective. Is the litter box near its food or water? They don't like that. Is the litter clean? Has the arrival of a new baby or animal in the household upset the cat? Sometimes cats don't like a particular brand of litter. So if you decided to change it recently, switch it back. So many cats insist on drinking out of the faucets. What's up with that? Cats love running water, probably because it's cool and fresh. You can buy a water fountain that's made specifically for cats. It's basically a plug-in water bowl with a reservoir. The device recirculates water, so it's always running. Put the fountain next to the faucet that the cat has been drinking from, and gradually move it from wherever and whenever you want it. How do I keep my cat off the kitchen countertops? Give it something more interesting to do. Put a climbing tree right in the kitchen. Buy new cat toys. Also, cut clutter. The more stuff on the counter, the more appealing it is to a cat. Can an outdoor cat get used to living indoors? Absolutely. I recently helped some farm cats and went to live in a New York City apartment. They were used to chasing things around, so we gave them laser lights to chase. DVDs that showed footages of birds flying around. They would sit there and watch the TV screen. Keeping cats indoors is best, so they won't get lost or hit by a car. But you need to give them lots to do and spend time playing with them every day. If you think your cat is bored, should you get a second cat? Pet owners often think cats want a playmate, but in fact, they don't like sharing spaces. So you can't just add a cat to your household and expect everyone to get along. To do the introduction properly, make sure each cat has his own food, water, and litter box to feel secure. Can people in small homes give cats enough play space? Definitely. We even did it on a houseboat. The key is vertical space. Cats like going high as opposed to wide. You can buy a tall, narrow climbing tree. Get a ramp that goes to the ledge, or try a little window perch. A little shelf that attaches to a windowsill can hold a cat bed. You really seem to love cats. Why don't you own one yourself? Sadly, my beautiful cat Millie passed away recently. She was 9. I may get another one soon. Why do they love to rub up against people's legs? Cats have scent glands on the sides of their face. When a cat rubs against you, it's saying hello and claiming you as part of its territory. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode from Soups to Nuts. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Beth Ludwig, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long, until next time.